how long we got? Where's our destination today?
I don't know. We got 20 miles to cover. Let's talk some movies. People don't know how to drive.
Are we going to get lunch on this gig? You see anything good recently?
Not really. We got a little time, Steve. Let's do a podcast.
Sounds good. Okay, well, welcome to Film Driven. We're back. I'm Steve Haskins.
I'm Andre Shane, driving around as usual, talking movies. And, Steve, today's subject kind of popped into my head a few weeks ago when I was watching a movie I'll talk about later. But, you know, Steve, how sometimes you have actors that you really, really dislike. You know that, right?
Sure.
You have people that you just can't stand, and there's no reason for it necessarily. Sometimes it's instinctive. Sometimes it's specific stuff you can point to. But sometimes those same actors will come out with something that'll completely change your opinion about them. And this is what our show is about today.
Yeah, actors that we used to hate and now we at least like. Well, maybe sometimes love, but...
Yeah, maybe. You know, it's a process, you know. Actors' careers kind of develop over the years. And, of course, unlike in the days of old Hollywood, actors just don't make as many movies as they used to. So
yeah, that's true.
It's difficult for people in that profession to sometimes pick a lot of consistently good projects. And that's a huge part of what being a successful actor is these days, is just the ability to pick good stuff and say no to crappy stuff. And a lot of actors, of course, do not have that ability.
No, like Burt Reynolds is pretty famous for having horrible taste in things. That anytime Burt Reynolds has been in a good movie, it's the equivalent of a blind dog finding a bone. and at the other end of the spectrum, like Matt Damon, who's not one of the actors we'll really talk about today, because we both generally like Matt Damon.
Yeah,
one of the things I like about Matt Damon is I wouldn't call Matt Damon my favorite actor, but Matt Damon's generally in really good movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if Matt Damon's in a movie, I'm like, that's probably, worth my time.
I don't know. I'm not sure I would agree with the Matt Damon assessment at this point. I think in the last few years, Matt Damon's made some real turkeys.
Oh, all right.
That's my opinion. I mean, I didn't like Elysium, and I didn't like the Zero Theorem, in which he was granted just a cameo.
But both those movies are at least made by interesting directors and things that on paper before the movie comes out,
true,
you could see okay.
Perhaps noble failures,
you could
call them. Yes, I agree. But we're not here to talk about Matt Damon.
No.
Because my feelings about Matt Damon have been pretty...
pretty steady.
Yeah, pretty steady since the beginning of his career. I like him, and that's about all I can say. He doesn't excite me with anything he does. But that's the thing about some of the actors we're going to talk to today, is that they have pretty aggressively changed their on-screen personas and, pretty confidently reinvented themselves on screen. And my first candidate for actors that I used to hate but now love is Jake Gyllenhaal. Jake Gyllenhaal is a guy I just downright disliked, Steve. I really did not like his acting, and I found him to be rather mannequin-like throughout his early career. And he was in good movies. There's no question about his ability to at least pick non-stinkers. Prince of Persia aside, and maybe Day After Tomorrow, or, those were really crappy.
Oh, yeah. I actively dislike Jake Gyllenhaal, and I still actively dislike Jake Gyllenhaal. I often found him to be the worst thing in movies. I was constantly, as a straight man, there are some actors that I'm like, okay, that's a handsome dude. I understand. Jake Gyllenhaal just blew me away that I was constantly over the years asking female friends of mine, is Jake Gyllenhaal that good looking? Because, I just didn't see how the cuteness was overwhelming the terrible acting. And part of my thing with Jake Gyllenhaal goes all the way back to, one of his first notable roles was Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko, that may have been the first, right?
Well, I'm not sure. But
he did one before that, I think.
tied to that is I find personally Donnie Darko extremely overrated. Like, not terrible or anything, but just like the cult of Donnie Darko eludes me. So the idea that this shitty actor, half his rep is based on the fact that he was the lead in an overrated movie, didn't really help. Yes. So what turned you on Jake Gyllenhaal?
Well, I'll tell you, there was a couple of things that turned me on Jake Gyllenhaal, but what really, really turned me, and this is sort of a thing we're going to come back with all of these actors, you know, ultimately it's going to come down to one movie where you just go like, holy shit, this person's good, really good. I mean, for me, it was Nightcrawler. It was the film that came out last year, and in it, Jake Gyllenhaal plays this sort of bottom feeder, you know, news gatherer, we'd call him. One of those guys who basically chases ambulances with a video camera in hopes of catching a glimpse of a dismembered body or something like that. And the movie's very interesting and has a lot of interesting things to say about the media and so on and so forth. But Gyllenhaal in that movie, Steve, is just stunning. First of all, the first thing that struck me about that performance is there was a physical transformation there. And that's not everything in a performance, as you know, but it's a big thing, you know, when an actor can really change their overall appearance and just their overall demeanor, and that's what Gyllenhaal did very successfully. So literally from the first moment you see him on screen in that film, it just kind of punches you in the face, like, holy crap, this guy really transformed himself. And then as the movie progresses, the character gains a lot of depth and a lot of different dimension. Sometimes you like him, sometimes you hate him. He is funny. It's that great combination of like a committed character performance that also manages to be humorous and to find that sort of a joy of performance thing that you don't see in a lot of actors these days. Honestly, there's too much angst going on, and he was always like that as well. And in this movie, you get the feeling that he's in on the joke, that he gets the humorous aspects of the character, he gets the satirical aspects of the film, and it's just an amazing performance. And if for anybody who hasn't seen Nightcrawler yet, especially in our business, it's really worth seeing. It's an excellent film.
Yeah, I to date I have not seen it. I know that movie got a lot of buzz last year. It was on a lot of people's list of like the best movies of last year.
Very deservedly. And he's outstanding. And then, you know, when you see the performance like that, then you can go back to some of the other stuff he's done, and sometimes you can kind of reevaluate the past career choices. Like, the previous film I saw Gyllenhaal in was a movie called End of Watch, and it's a cop movie, and I had issues with the film, but I remember thinking at the time, like, he's not aggressively annoying me as he has so often done in the past.
Yeah.
And maybe that was sort of my beginning of a change of perspective on this guy, but, you know, now rewatching End of Watch, I was actually impressed with him. I mean, it was not a performance that drew a lot of attention to itself, but it was solid. It was believable. He just seemed like a young cop working in L.A. It just made sense. And I'm not sure, to this day, I'm not sure how I feel about Gyllenhaal and Brokeback Mountain, which is an excellent movie, but he seems to be lacking it.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, my two favorite, if you can call them that, performances at Gyllenhaal were Brokeback Mountain and Zodiac. In both of those movies, the reason they're my favorite Gyllenhaal performances is because he did not ruin the movie. He did it. Like, he just kind of, like, stayed out of the way. I mean, Zodiac in particular is interesting because it's almost, like, Fincher, again, we've discussed in the past, Fincher and or his casting agent are really excellent. Fincher's movies are really well cast, and Gyllenhaal plays a young, naive, interested, but slightly out of his depth character.
Yeah, yeah.
So casting young, seemingly naive, slightly out of his depth, Jake Gyllenhaal worked perfectly.
Yeah.
And again, I wasn't like blown away by him. It was like an early Tom Cruise performance where he's more of a blank slate that doesn't actively take away from the movie. And Brokeback Mountain, the same deal. Like, he wasn't bad. And, you know, I mean, again, he was up against Heath Ledger, who, you know, I thought was great in that movie and is a much better actor in general. Gyllenhaal also, you know, at the end of that movie, he is loaded with one of my least favorite fake moustaches in the history of cinema. God.
That moustache almost ruined it for me. Yeah. And about the Heath Ledger thing, I mean, it's just like what Heath Ledger is amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
That's a movie where I think, like, most people were, like, thinking, like, wow, Heath Ledger is, I mean, this is a major acting talent. This is not just some pretty boy.
Yeah.
And Gyllenhaal fails to bring about that kind of a lightning bolt reaction to his character in that movie. He
Correct.
Seems exactly what Heath Ledger is not in that film,
yeah.
You know? And yeah, the mustache is really just kind of the icing on the upper lip, isn't it? It's just,
yeah, I mean, like, if any pathos Gyllenhaal generates from that movie is just because you believe Heath Ledger's feelings for him, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like Heath Ledger's so good that he's able to, like, transfer some of this greatness, like, oh, well, if the Heath Ledger character is so hot and bothered by this guy, then there's got to be something, you know?
Heath Ledger sells his lovability, but I don't think he sells it enough. I just really don't.
Yeah.
Still a fine film, but then, you know, but then you get into, like, various attempts at, like, leading man territory that just plain old fails for Jake, you know, in my opinion. And obviously, The Prince of Persia, which is a video game adaptation, you know, always a tricky thing in movies,
yeah.
It seems like. But man, it's terrible. He's god awful in it. And it's funny because he, you know, he hits the gym a lot, you know, and he sort of gets into this, what he thinks is an action dude physical shape. And I think somewhere along the line, probably in the last few years, Jake Gyllenhaal realized, like, that is not what makes a good action hero.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need washboard abs to be an action hero, you know? I mean, it's a completely different set of attitudes and skills that makes a good action hero, not just hanging out in the gym a lot. And, you know, his complete failure, I mean, it was a massive, massive bomb for the studio at the time. His complete failure in that role may have been the thing that kind of turned him around a little bit and kind of made him maybe reevaluate some of his
choices. Yeah, well, I mean, I got no inside info on that, but, you know, it's easy to imagine that was a role he might have taken for the money.
Yeah.
That, you know, his agent or somebody
sure.
was like, be the lead in this big action thing, they'll pay you a lot, and
yeah.
if it hits, you've got a franchise. So then anytime you do a job for the money and then it doesn't actually work out, you start to be like, well, Why even do that stuff?
Yeah, it ends up being damaging, and it damages a lot of young actor careers. I really didn't understand why he needed to do that movie. I mean, there was zero need. I mean, he's never really had a marquee name.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he needed a pool.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, again, it's a strange thing, and, you know, I guess what, you know, a giant studio comes calling and wants to make you the pole in your tent pole, you know,
yeah.
It's hard for anybody to say no, especially when a lot of money is thrown at him. But I wish people would say no. He should have definitely said no, because, you know, he's sort of working on this reputation as a serious actor, quote unquote, at the time. And then to come out with that thing, it just seems like a little bit of a career suicide thing, because even on paper, that movie couldn't have looked that good.
If you've seen it,
like, you'd know what I'm talking about. I mean,
another strike against Gyllenhaal is I'm not entirely, I think he leans more towards the Burt Reynolds school of choosing projects. And for example, you mentioned The Day After Tomorrow. If you've never seen The Day After Tomorrow, I love The Day After Tomorrow as a total train wreck. Get your buddies together and have some beers every time something stupid happens
yeah,
in that
yeah,
movie.
Yeah.
That movie is hilariously terrible.
Yeah.
And Jake Gyllenhaal, at the time of that movie, gave interviews about how that movie, while being a disaster action movie, was also, you know, a very serious commentary on global warming. And even went so far, I remember reading a Jake Gyllenhaal bit about how he wanted there to be, like, an uplifting political aspect to every project he does.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal,
which makes me want to fucking vomit.
Well, that's what he came off as, kind of a really pompous, clueless, that he was trying to lead, you know, lend all this world-saving gravitas
to an exploitation film. Basically.
Yeah, and a movie that's, I mean, dumb on any level.
A bad exploitation film, I agree.
And so, if Jake Gyllenhaal is approaching that movie thinking like, wow, I'm really, you know, this is going to open some eyes, that's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's one of those actors that needs to have massive turkeys in order to understand, to kind of readjust his career course or whatever. Yeah. So maybe, you know, Prince of Persia leads to great performances like Nightcrawler. And there's a preview out for his next film, which is called Southpaw, which is like, looks like just kind of a Rocky-type boxing movie. But having said that, if you watch the preview, it's another transformation. I mean, first of all, he does get rather huge in the film to play a light heavyweight boxer. And those fight sequences look pretty damn impressive, Steve. And the movie actually could be pretty good by the looks of it. So there is another Gyllenhaal performance where he will kind of prove that I was right to put him on this prestigious list. Or I'll be proven wrong and go back to hating him.
Well, some other actors that are interesting to me is there are actors who get thrust into kind of the lead roles, and then you what? And maybe they're just not cut out for that. And then when they go and you see them in smaller parts, you seem to like them a lot more.
Right.
And one of the ones for me, I'll kind of throw at you, that I was blown away by, and this is a small thing, but Anne Heche actually had a career, you know, where they try to thrust her into leading roles. She made that kind of action-adventure movie with Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. And
7 Days, 7 Nights.
Yeah, and then, you know, she did some TV for a while, and you kind of forget about her. But then, you know, I saw this movie called Cedar Rapids, which I've discussed in years past. It's a comedy. Anne Heche is in it. Anne Heche is so good in that movie that you're just like, whoa. Like, even though you recognize her face, you're like, who is this? Where is this person been hiding? Because she looks fabulous. She's playing her age. And she's just so real and perfect in this movie that you're like, wow, like, maybe the secret to Anne Heche all along was that she should just dip in for, you know, 20, 30 minutes a movie and not, you know, not make a romantic comedy or something.
Right,
like that.
Right.
I mean, another guy I know who's very famous for this, and even though he's now back to doing lead roles, of course, is the McConaissance. Mr. Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey,
went through a realm where, you know, we all loved him in Dazed and Confused, and he was charming, but then he, you know, we maybe loved him less when he was making romantic comedies and John Grisham adaptations.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. You know, McConaughey is almost like a prime example of what this show is all about, because he was the guy who did some character work early in his career, was very, very good, and then somebody just looked at him and said, oh my God, it's the second coming of Paul Newman, and we need to put him in every lead out there. And in my opinion, early in his career, McConaughey, just in terms of acting chops, was way not ready for that. I mean, I think, unlike Anne Heche, who became famous already being a very developed actor, McConaughey, that wasn't the case. He was not seasoned at all.
Yeah.
So he comes in, and all of a sudden they're like, well, we got to put this guy in the lead of everything, you know, and we'll put him in these romantic comedies, and we'll put him, you know, he'll play the young idealistic lawyer here, and it just was not friggin' working, man. I mean, in my opinion, literally, he just wasn't ready. I think he can do that stuff fine now, but at that time, he wasn't ready. So he ended up making a lot of these really, really insipid romantic comedies, and none of them worked very well. He was, like, to me, he was pretty actively obnoxious in those films. I mean, I disliked him. On top of that, he had some sort of personal things that happened that kind of made him seem kind of like a silly guy in real life.
Yeah.
you know, nothing crazy, you know, nothing offensive, but just kind of weird and undignified, really, is what
it
came down
to.
Yeah,
it became a little bit of like, oh, here's a funny story about this B-level actor.
Yeah, he became a little bit of a punchline, and I think for a long time, like, people were not considering him for leads anymore. Like, his career was in serious trouble. And then, like, somewhere along the lines, he realized that his strong suit is actually kind of playing weird characters.
Yeah.
And once he switched gears into that a little bit more seriously, things started clicking for him big time. And, of course, you know, culminating in an Oscar win for the Dallas Buyers Club.
It's like he started out, you know, it's unclear sometimes you don't know, like, you know, as a fan or just a viewer, you put narratives on things which maybe don't exist. But the narrative of McConaughey, it really does seem like through these smaller parts, he really improved as an actor. So then when the larger roles started to come, he was more ready for them, you know? Like,
yeah.
his skills were up there. And in these smaller roles, he realized that, like, older, affable McConaughey would often just be a breath of fresh air in these movies. Like, oh, here's a guy who's fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, a prime example, and this was actually even earlier in his career, pretty much right at the time when he was making these horrible comedies, he did kind of a weird B-level movie called Reign of Fire.
The Dragon
movie. Christian Bale was the lead, but he was kind of the second lead. And in that movie, that was sort of an inkling of what Matthew McConaughey could be, exactly as you described. He came into this movie, he had this crazy character with a shaved head and facial tattoos who carried a battle axe, and he was entertaining. You know, he just kind of pumped a lot of adrenaline into that film right at the point where it needed it, which is incidentally a sign of a pretty good filmmaking, in my opinion.
Yeah.
When you realize, like, well, the movie's starting to drag here, let's pump it up a little bit. And he did that job beautifully, and he was terrific in the movie. And that performance is the kind of stuff that he got back to doing in recent years with Dallas Buyers Club, with The Wolf of Wall Street, and even Interstellar, in which he gives a pretty quirky performance that's not a usual leading man kind of a thing, you know? So he's sort of the guy who always had it in him, right? But just took some weird career choices that really, really hurt him. And now he seems to be back doing interesting stuff. I mean, he's got interesting stuff coming up, and I'm excited to see what Matthew McConaughey is going to do next.
Yeah,
I'm really interested.
He is a guy who I don't know if I hated him or anything, but I did. I just didn't give a shit. You know, like, I didn't care. And if you heard, like, who's in this movie, like Matthew McConaughey, when Matthew McConaughey was like 30, I'd be like, ah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but now you're right. Now I'm actively enjoying him.
Absolutely.
And if I hear that McConaughey's in a movie, I'm like, oh, I want to see the new Matthew McConaughey movie.
Yeah. Well, was there a movie like recently that really like sort of made you reevaluate McConaughey? Because like for me, the Richard Linklater movie, Bernie. Starring Bernie.
He's great in Bernie.
Starring Jack Black. Now, Matthew McConaughey's now the lead in it. He's got a small part. It's also worth saying that Richard Linklater kind of discovered McConaughey when he had a small part in Dazed and Confused, arguably the most memorable part of the movie. McConaughey is in Bernie, which is kind of based on a true story, and he plays a real guy, and he's not in the film a lot, and he doesn't really do anything that outlandish in it. He plays a Texas dude, which he plays a lot, let's face it.
Does play, like, he's got some kind of dorky glasses, and he is not... He plays a Texas dude, but he's not the cool guy Texas dude.
Exactly. He's a guy who wants to be the cool guy Texas dude. And it's just a very interesting performance. I always enjoy when actors can get on screen for a limited amount of time and create a rounded character. And he did that beautifully. And it was interesting because I'm watching a movie. I really love that film. And that movie, incidentally, also turned around Jack Black for me to a large degree.
Oh, he is, yeah.
Because I've always disliked him, and in that movie, I was like, wow, a real performance. So
yeah.
Jack Black, we'll add him to the list here. But McConaughey in that movie was very subtle, and you just went like, well, this guy's a good actor.
Yeah, and for me, it was like three things. Well, actually, there was that, and then... he's great in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Fantastic.
In a very small...
Yeah. Again,
and,
cameo, bam, nails it.
Yes, and a jolt of energy that, I mean, it's early in the film, but a lot of people credit, you know, his character and his performance for, like, that sets the tone of the whole
movie. Very much.
That he is Leo's entry into the whole Wall Street world and how it works.
Yeah.
And just, there you go. Like, he's got, I mean, maybe 5 minutes total of screen time, but...
And basically a monologue, essentially,
yep.
You know.
Sets the tone, bam, he's off and running. So that was really good. The other thing that I was just impressed by was that True Detective series.
Right.
Where he was very different.
Right.
And that made me feel that, you know, he's the real deal. That was great. There's a couple other ones that, have you seen Mud?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Mud was...
Now, Mud's a leading role.
Right, right. Mud is a movie where the lead is actually a kid.
Okay.
So the kid is really the leading role, but he is certainly the main adult
role. Yeah, it's his name on the poster.
Exactly, exactly. And again, and it's another kind of unusual character, has unusual rhythms, and it seems to be, while seemingly tailored to his abilities, it's also different from other stuff he's done in the past, and definitely that was a big turnaround for him, a big pivotal picture that kind of made a lot of people like notice him again and just take him seriously, because that's a huge part of what actors do, you know, is just to be taken seriously in serious parts, and many never really achieve that, and some lose it,
you know,
over the years by making bad choices.
So McConaughey is an example, too, of an actor who, part of what changed my opinion on them is just them getting older. And they could be really similar, but, like, you know, young McConaughey, you can be like, oh, who's this douchebag? You know, like, this guy thinks he's so cool and whatever.
Yeah.
But then McConaughey, the 44-year-old dad who's kind of fun, just suddenly becomes a lot more charming.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
age is a big part of it.
Yeah, there's some other actors like that. Like, for example, Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves is a guy who, you know, was never a very good actor. To this day, may not be a very good actor. But, you know, when Keanu Reeves would give you the kind of, like, sullen face, silent treatment as a 26-year-old, you're like, this guy's dumb, isn't he? He just seems dumb. But Keanu Reeves in his 40s doing stuff like that suddenly becomes a little more, you know, like, oh, maybe he's not dumb. Maybe he's reticent. You know, like maybe he's a...
he's laconic.
Yeah, like it's a little more Clint Eastwood and not, oh, he's just a box of rocks.
Yeah. Well, definitely, you know what's interesting to me about Keanu Reeves, and always was, you know, I totally agree that he never was a good actor in any way, shape, or form, although he's obviously charismatic enough to carry a lot of movies, but, you know, his thing was always the ability to choose good movies, you know, like whatever idiot he often comes off as on film, and early on in his career, he almost specialized in playing dumb guys, from Bill and Ted's to The River's Edge. That was his on-screen persona, is the dumb stoner dude. But if you actually look at his career, it's actually kind of stunning how many good pictures that guy is in, including The River's Edge, which is kind of a classic of the 80s, and Bill and Ted's, which is also kind of a classic comedy from the 80s. But then you just go down the list. You got your Speed. You got your Point Break. You got Matrix, which in many ways revolutionized the film industry. And, you know, he's certainly slowed down in the 21st century as far as his choices go, you know, and some of the stuff is a little bit questionable. But now I think he's kind of back. I think John Wick was a kick-ass action movie. And one thing he really deserves credit on, as well as his ability to choose seemingly good films, is his physical abilities. I mean, you could sort of scoff at some of the stuff he was doing in The Matrix, which was a lot of it was wire work and so on and so forth, but you got to give it to him. I mean, the action scenes in The Matrix were composed of longer shots, which require an amazing amount of physical ability from the performer. That's why, you know, in Chinese kung fu movies, the kung fu stars are all top-notch athletes in their own right. Not every actor can do that, and it's genuinely difficult. And another thing is that it's dangerous. More stuntmen get hurt and killed in these fake fights that we kind of take for granted than get killed in car chases and crazy jumping off building stunts. Those are statistically safer to do. So when you see Keanu Reeves do pretty badass action beats in movies like John Wick and in movies like, well, even 47 Ronin, which was not a good movie. But but again, you had some very, very impressive physical actor. And, you know, the guy's 50 years old, which makes me feel very ancient, actually. but Keanu Reeves is 50. And at 50, he's able to do some very impressive physical stunt work. And right onto him.
Yeah, and it's notable that Keanu Reeves, you know, recently directed a movie, and the movie he directed, it's a kung fu movie.
Yes.
And he cast himself as the villain.
That's right.
So,
and that's another movie he's excellent in physically. That's not a bad film, actually.
Yeah.
It's a pretty solid
kung fu
flick.
It's an interesting choice.
Man of Tai Chi, it's called.
Yeah.
I think it's on Netflix, and I think it's worth seeing. It's an interesting film, and it's got an interesting philosophy to it, you know? And,
yeah.
That actually explores Eastern philosophy. Obviously, it's something he's interested in. You know, ethnically, I think he's like half Chinese or something like that. So he's really into it. He's really into martial arts, and he's kind of capitalizing it. He also was one of the producers on a documentary called Side by Side, which examined the evolution of film acquisition versus digital acquisition.
Yeah.
And that's an excellent, like, if you're a film lover or work in the industry, that's a must-see film. I mean, it literally is the most serious examination of the digital revolution that's happened in cinema in the past 10 years or so. So kudos to him for that, too. And he's sort of the on-camera interviewer, and he seems super sharp, you know. He knows how to ask questions and conduct an interview.
Well, I always had a lot of, well, not a lot, but I felt bad for Keanu Reeves the human, because the reports are that Keanu Reeves has always been a pretty smart guy. And, you know, so if you're a smart person who everybody thinks is dumb, you know, I'm sure he, you know, he wanted to prove to the world that he wasn't dumb. But when he was young, again, I actually found this more annoying about him, because he just struck me as, like, a guy in college who is like, I'm not dumb. I'll show you I'm not dumb. Look how thick this book I'm reading is.
He always has to prove himself.
Yeah, so it just seemed like, you're like,
here, I'm reading Kierkegaard.
Yeah,
look at me.
You know, like a guy who'd drop Nietzsche quotes into an interview just to prove, like, would a dumb guy do that? I don't think so. But then when he's older.
Which is exactly what a dumb guy would do.
Exactly, exactly. But then when he got older, you know, he just seemed a little bit more comfortable in his skin. And you're like, okay, like, it just, it became less annoying. And he can just exist more.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm down with Keanu these days. And I actually enjoy his past movies. Again, not because he's so good in them, but because they tend to be good movies. Like, if you watch Point Break, for example, you know, nobody else could be Johnny Utah, man. Johnny Utah is occupied by Keanu. That's it. Nobody else can do that role, you know, and it's kind of fun, and he is enjoyable in it, you know.
Well, Keanu's the, you know, for the longest time, too, was the, I always say, I love actors who just look like they are the character. Like, you know, I kind of, you know, I try and, it's not like I have certain rules for acting, because there's always exceptions, you know? Like, I could say I like subtle acting, and then there's performances I like that are larger than life. But, you know, to me, an actor who just is somebody, like, you know, older character actors are great at this, especially
right.
People who spend a lot of time on stage, that they just kind of get on with the business, and they just are the character.
Right.
And especially younger actors who want to prove that they're serious, you just always see them acting. You always see them trying. And Keanu was really bad at that. Like, any time he was supposed to be serious, you could almost see the worry lines forming on his forehead of him, like, look, I am trying really, really hard to prove I am acting. And, I mean, that's just boring to me. But, you know, now he's more comfortable in his skin.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Keanu.
Absolutely. But John Wick definitely is the... You know, even though it has that thing that I hate in movies of the past few years, which is the one-dimensional Russian mob guys.
Yeah.
I am so tired of the Russian mob. They need to get away from the Russian mob.
What's the shortage
everything.
Of villains? Yeah.
I know.
We need to
and
find the,
easy
go-to, it's the default go-to villain. Yeah.
You could hire any white guy, any European actor can play the Russian mobster.
If you're really lazy, you don't even have to make them Russian. You could just kind of make them vaguely Eastern European.
Eastern, or call them Chechen or
something
some
sort
like
of
that.
Slavic slant on it, and then you don't even have to define it. They're
I
just,
know. But I just wish that they would make these guys a little bit more multidimensional than they tend to be in those movies. And that's just, and in John Wick, that is the case. But, you know, the thing that's about John Wick that's different than, like, a lame movie like The Equalizer, for example, where the Russian mobsters don't even, have the benefit of a character. There's no character there. There's just a, it's like a killing machine, you know? At least in John Wick, there is a little bit character thing going on, a little character motivation happening. And on top of that, the John Wick kind of takes place, like you think it's a contemporary setting, but as the movie progresses, you realize that it kind of takes place in its own kind of world that they create specifically for John Wick. In that case, it's a world sort of dominated by various clans of assassins, you know, and you don't realize that when the movie starts, but as it develops, you're like, oh, I'm in this kind of like almost a comic book type of universe where normal rules don't quite apply. So it's worth seeing. It's a fun B picture, and he's really, really good in it, and he's also the producer of it, so he's responsible for making the film in the first place, and that's always impressive to me as well when actors actually develop their own project, you know? So that's pretty cool. And talking about actors that have been sort of around for a long period of time and were perhaps put into leading positions, leading roles, I mean, maybe before they were quite ready. I mean, I think the prime example of that is actually Jude Law.
Oh, yeah.
Because early on, Jude Law, you know, he started, he wasn't instantly put into leading guy categories, but Jude Law sort of started being sort of the pretty boy. So in virtually every early movie that I remember seeing Jude Law, he usually played the main character's like secret gay lover, like that.
That's
right?
Interesting.
There was a whole bunch of movies in which he played
or is it just the talented Mr. Ripley colored your experience?
No,
so
it wasn't. The talented Mr. Ripley came actually later in that whole thing, but you remember, like, Jude Law was in the movie with Stephen Fry about Oscar Wilde. He played, like, his gay lover in that one. He was in the Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil with Kevin Spacey, played the gay lover who got murdered. So it was like this weird thing that he came out, and I think it was just the fact that he was so pretty.
He really is. I mean, to me, Jude Law is one of those men that I do see why he would get cast for just his... I mean, I think, you know, as a straight man, Jude Law is a stunningly handsome man. And that guy's appeal I did see. And I thought he worked perfect in The Talented Mr. Ripley of, like, oh, I can see why people would just be drawn to, like, this guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, like, glowingly attractive.
Yeah, that's very, very true. But Mr. Ripley, and we could certainly come back to Mr. Ripley, because in Mr. Ripley, I think it was actually, he's actually perfect in that film.
Yeah.
And, but the problem is, because it sort of came at the point of his career where it was just a long string of the, essentially playing that same type of character.
Sure.
It just kind of, when I saw it at the time, it didn't really jump out at me. I was just like, oh, it's this guy again playing,
well,
you know.
And I always remember this.
The boy toy.
The columnist Michael Musto had a joke when they were predicting Oscar nominations that Jude Law was going to be the first person in the history of the Oscars to get nominated for being cute. And...
Well, but right after that, right after The Talented Mr. Ripley, that's very true. Jude Law instantly started getting leads in these movies. And in fact, he was so in so many different films that Chris Rock, who was hosting the Oscars, had like a 5-minute who the fuck is Jude Law routine that he did that was really one of the worst received Oscar monologues of all time, because people were looking around like going like, hey, Jude's a good guy. Why is he picking on him?
And was, of course, the catalyst for one of Sean Penn's famous
rants.
Yes, trying to be funny, charming, informative something and just failing.
And coming off as a total dickhead.
I mean, if ever there's anyone who should always have a script, it's Sean Penn.
That's very true. He should definitely stay on book. But the Jude Law thing, I mean, this was a, like McConaughey, the guy was, like, I think put in movies as a lead before he was ready. And it's not that he was even in bad films. Like, he starred in movies that I really liked, like Enemy at the Gates, which was a cool World War II story from, like, the Soviet perspective.
Yes.
Also,
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris playing an awesome villain and... Joseph Fiennes, and yeah, I mean, it just had a really great cast, actually, and they show it all the time, and I really like the film, even though it's way longer than it needs
it's
to be.
It's kind of funny that Joseph...
2.5 hours long.
Yeah, that Joseph Fiennes is in that, because he's also... that movie will almost be a trivia question. Because Jude Law is one of those guys that every now and then, Hollywood... And this is probably the catalyst for Chris Rock's joke, actually, is that Hollywood decides that somebody is an up-and-coming star, and they kind of overshoot the public.
Yeah.
And they just start putting them in leads, and then it turns out that, you know, they're not enough of a star to actually get people in most
movies.
Of the country to right. go to. A recent example is Ryan Reynolds, who gets shit on a lot, and I actually think Ryan Reynolds is an okay actor. But for a while, they kept throwing him in these lead movies, like, one after another,
right.
until, you know, and he's just not getting work. And now Ryan Reynolds is even segueing into what happened to Jude Law, is that Jude Law now is almost an overqualified supporting player in
right.
these roles.
Right.
To the point where in the Sherlock Holmes movies, you know, Jude Law, the pretty boy... is that, you know, he's playing the Watson character.
That's right.
Which in Sherlock Holmes's past would clearly be, you know, the more homier, fatter
homelier.
Character.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, Jude Law plays a kind of a tough guy in those movies, and he's kind of convincing at it, which is interesting.
Well, yeah, it's a good performance in those movies, but it's just kind of intriguing to me that in the big screen Sherlock Holmes movies, he is considered, you know, just by default... the less charming between him and Robert Downey Jr., that they have decided that Robert Downey Jr. is actually the charismatic lead.
Right.
And Jude Law is better served being the supporting, more serious
yeah.
role.
Well,
and
yeah.
and it's still, I mean, it's funny. I think he's good in those movies. But, you know, even under the mustache and the bowler hat, you're a little like... I don't know, you still can't quite keep the Jude Law. Like, I'm like, that's an extremely handsome Watson dude, you know?
Yeah, yeah, he looks good, and he fits in with that whole world, incidentally. He looks very natural in this kind of Victorian period stuff, you know? And I think it works well. And another thing is, like, over the years, Jude Law has made some choices, like, physical choices. Like, for example, he's kind of let himself go bald a little bit, which... in this day and age is not really necessary for actors. They
yeah.
just get hair transplants. And he just said, you know, fuck it. I'll just look how I naturally look. And it's actually helped his career because it's countered his pretty boy image. And it's kind of brought him down to earth. So now you can put Jude Law in a movie where he plays kind of a working class Cockney dude or Scottish dude as he does in a recent film, Black Sea, in which he's excellent, by the way, and be believable. And you're not really distracted by his prettiness as you were in the past. And on top of that, he's got the chops, man. He can act.
He is. He's been through the whole gamut of British training.
Yes.
And he's got lots of chops that he can fall back on.
Right, right. He can do accents. He's, you know, he can do stage plays. It's yeah, there's a lot going on there. You know, he can be American. He can, you know, once the Brits learn the friggin' American accent, Steve, it's kind of over. Right? Like, American actors can't really compete.
Yeah,
with
well, there's a lot. You know, I actually had a casting agent in New York explain this to me once, like, and this was just for even industrials, you know, corporate video type stuff, but they say even, you know, the young women in America, if they want to be actors, they take classes, they get some training, and there's a lot of young men who start out as, like, models,
mm-hmm.
and then somebody's like, oh, have you done any acting? You should do some acting, and they go, oh, that's a good idea, and so what they do is they just get some headshots and just start going on auditions. Like, that's it. Like, they memorize a couple paragraphs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, there's certainly a lot of American actors who are very good and trained, but you know, especially these young, pretty guys in this country, a lot of times they don't have a lot of training.
No.
They just jump into it thinking, like, well, how hard can it be? And
it's hard.
It is hard.
It's friggin' hard. It's not easy to headline a movie. And Jude Law has been excellent. And I'm going to go for the pivotal Jude Law performance for me. He did a movie that came out in the last couple of years. It's called Dom Hemingway. And it's a very much a character piece. It's one of those wacky, freewheeling English movies, kind of really inspired by With Nail and I, if you've seen that film.
Sure.
And it even stars Richard Grant in a, you know, as the second lead in the movie. But Jude Law plays this sort of cockney criminal dude, really crazy guy who just gets out of jail and gets into various misadventures. It's an interesting film. I don't know if it's for everybody. It's certainly in your face and obnoxious, and his performance is very... He plays a guy who's not particularly likable, who's kind of an asshole. And sometimes that's a hard sell. But I tell you something, if you get a chance to see that film, you should see it, because it is an excellent performance. I mean, he really, really pulls it off beautifully. And it's complex. It's a complex performance. He's sort of expected to do many different things. You know, he's doing kind of an accent. He's doing a broad character. But underneath, there's a lot of pain. And, you know, on the one hand, he's an unpredictable psychopath. But on the other hand, he's kind of lovable. It's just one of those multifaceted performances that really got overlooked, unfortunately, because nobody saw the film.
Yeah.
But, and again, not for everybody, but if you like your British crime film, it's pretty damn good. If you like Withnail and I type guys with drug problems just roaming around the countryside thing, you will probably like this film. And if you want to see an excellent performance by an actor, you should definitely see that film. Jude Law really, really a standout in that movie.
Well, you know, a lot of these actors we talk about, in addition to getting older, one of the things is just sometimes they almost wear me down, Andre. That, you know, if you see the same actor over and over again for 20 years, they become like a family member, like an old friend.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe the ultimate example for this to me of an actor who I used to fairly dislike in an active way, even though this person made a lot of movies I saw, and now I'm at the point where I am charmed by and root for them. The one and only Tom Cruise, who we've discussed before. Tom Cruise, I used to think, was actively a bad actor. I used to make fun of Tom Cruise. And then, you know, the tide turned where everybody started making fun of Tom Cruise, and now I kind of enjoy Tom Cruise, and I want people to stop beating up on him. And you're like, what do you want from Tom Cruise? The guy's just entertained you for like three decades.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I never like loved Tom Cruise, but I never disliked him either. Yeah. To me, he was kind of furniture for a lot of his films.
Yeah.
With an occasionally stunningly good performance.
Yeah.
And sometimes he delivers stunningly good performances in movies that really almost don't deserve stunningly good performances, like the recent Edge of Tomorrow.
I believe
that's what it's called.
Steve. Yeah.
He is phenomenal in that movie. There's so much going on in that movie because he plays a character who is kind of a Groundhog Day concept. He's reliving the same day over and over and over again. There's such a subtle character arc to what he does in that movie. And you realize, like, you know, again, there's a reason he's a huge movie star. There's a reason why some guys make $20 million a picture and other guys don't, you know. And there's a reason why some guys can open a movie and others can't, who may be actually better actors on paper. And granted, Tom Cruise's box office power has really diminished in the past few years, I think almost through a bizarrely negative media campaign that's been launched against him. I mean, we talked about this before, but I mean, I don't think Tom Cruise has done anything to deserve hatred from the general public.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is aimed strictly at the Church of Scientology, which, whatever, say what you will about it, but I mean, if that's what he believes in, then that's kind of his religion. So people dislike him for being a Scientologist. Is that not like pure bigotry? I don't know.
I mean, and it's certainly, the Scientology is a huge, huge part of it. But also, Tom Cruise is fascinating in, you know, a lot of people in both interviews and anecdotes from people who've worked with him. And Cruise strikes a lot of people as one of those bizarre guys who's always on. Like, he's always, like if you meet Tom Cruise, you're essentially meeting Maverick. Like, that's what he's going to be like. If you went out to dinner with Tom Cruise, it would still be, like, the full Tom Cruise, you know?
What would I have to, like, chest bump him and
stuff
like that?
Yeah, so with people like that, there's also, you know, and I include myself in this, you want to, like, you imagine, like, there's got to be some secret, like, you know, that, because you just can't, like, I can't imagine my life going through life always being that, like, friendly, outgoing, handshaking, smiling dude. Like, you know, and in my life, if I imagine ever doing that, it would be so much of an act.
Yeah.
That I then go in the bathroom and have to, like, collect myself. Like, whoo, pull it together, Steve. We got to go out and,
but and beat Steve Haskin.
But as you said, the thing is, we now have, like, decades and decades of, like, Tom Cruise is like that. And everybody who works with Tom Cruise, like, while some of them or find it a little odd, they also, it's like, well, what do you want from the guy? That he's just super nice to everybody. Everyone says he's a joy to work with.
Right. Well, that to me seems professional. He takes his job as a movie star very seriously.
And at the height of his fame, I mean, like, the absolute height, Tom Cruise made a conscious decision to, like, almost go through a checklist of, like, who's considered the greatest directors.
Right.
And I want to work with as many of them as possible.
Right.
I mean, it's interesting that, but Tom Cruise is, yeah, at this point, I'm interested in Tom Cruise's role. And partly, as you said, it's almost getting to the point where maybe we're not appreciating, like, when Tom Cruise finally does go away, we'll be kind of sad that there's not big Tom Cruise movies. You know, Paul Thomas Anderson was saying about specifically Edge of Tomorrow, like, that was, he was bummed out that people didn't go see that movie, because not only did he think it was a good movie, but he's like, that, like, Cruise was great in it, and that's something only he could do. Like, that's a Tom Cruise role that he just nailed.
Yeah, and Anderson would know, because he got one of the best performances ever out of Tom Cruise in Magnolia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tom Cruise, it's like, I think there's a, you know, we're going counter to sort of the national dialogue, which is turned from Tom Cruise being the biggest movie star in the world to everybody's, you know, shitting on Tom Cruise all of a sudden. I personally don't like it. I think it's mean-spirited. I don't think the guy's done anything to deserve that. And I think, on the contrary, he makes an effort to make good movies every time.
Yeah.
He makes an effort. And he's another guy, like Keanu Reeves. He's not, you know, he doesn't have the natural gift of acting. He doesn't. But what he does bring is a lot of hard work and a lot of effort. And again, that needs to be applauded. I think people should stop hating on Tom Cruise and at least admit that he's done a lot of fantastic work just in the past few months. You know? It's just weird, man. I don't get a lot of the public sentiment, which is negative towards him. I just don't understand it. But hey, I don't understand lots of stuff.
Well, that might be a good point to wrap it up, I think. Yeah.
That's right. I am confused, but I do appreciate good acting, and I want to see more from all of these people.
Yeah, you got anybody now that you hate that you think maybe could turn it around at some point?
No.
That's
I
true.
Love everybody. I am so full of love right now.
Ten years ago, you would not have predicted you'd be talking about how much you enjoy Jake Gyllenhaal's work, right?
No, never. Yeah. Not in a million years.
Yeah.
10 years, I mean, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have talked about it. So,
again,
I like it. I like it when actors win me over.
Yeah, it's good to be surprised.
Absolutely.
Well, we're almost at our destination. We might have to go do actual work.
That's right, Steve.
So, until next time, I'm Steve Haskin.
And I'm Andre Shane. Let's go. It's a thing.